Jen, thank you for being here on this Sunday morning. I know for many of us, our times got a little mixed up, but we had an extra hour this morning. So that's a wonderful thing. I am so happy that we're all here today. It's sunny where I am, feels beautiful where I am. And we have this safe space with all of us that gives us a moment of solace and peace and love and unconditional acceptance for one another as we work to find compassion and heal ourselves and our families. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I am so excited to have Dr. Rick Wallace back this morning with us. He has been with us, I think, about 10 times over the last three, almost 4 years, and always brings such a wealth of knowledge and experience. So this morning, as we kick off Men's Mental Health Month, Dr. Willis Wallace has come back to share on a personal level and a professional level and really help us as we deal with Black men, our Black men, some of whom may be on the phone this morning. Dr. Wallace has authored and published 27 books, I think now, might be 28. Is it 20,
27, 27.
27 books? Including his latest work, Academic Apartheid, Critical Mass, The Phenomenon of Next Level Living, Born in Captivity, Psychopathology as a Legacy of Slavery, and on and on and on. And I have many of his books. They're incredible. And they're available on Amazon. He has written and published thousands, yes, thousands of scholarly and prose articles and papers, with the overwhelming majority of his work surrounding the enigmatic issues plaguing Black people on every level. Some of his papers are Special Education as the Mechanism for the Miseducation of African Youth, Racial Trauma in African Americans, and I can go on and on and on. Dr. Wallace was born in the late 60s to a 15-year-old mother and an absent father. And he prides himself on being an incredible dad to 13 children, aged 38 to 9. And he has a 5-year-old grandson whom we have met in the past here at the Sunrise Project. He was raised by his great grandparents and adopted by them at the age of 2. And his bio, again, goes on and on and on. It's so incredible. And he is a scholar and a friend of Sunrise and a friend of many of our people that he's met through this network. So appreciate you, Dr. Wallace. And I want to say for this week, before I turn it over to him, as we kick off Men's Mental Health Month, we wanted to have Dr. Wallace here to talk about Black men specifically in mental health and what's happening for Black men. And we know that there is a need for Black men to get help, to seek treatment, to undo the stigma, to check in on their own mental health. And we actually, at the Sunrise Project and at Joy, are working with the Ad Council and Huntsman Mental Health Institute on a series called Love Your Mind. And just this week, the Ad Council launched its newest campaign called Love, comma, Your Mind. And before I turn over to Dr. Wallace, I want to play something here that features David Mann and Kirk Franklin and several others. It's a piece that we'll be launching. It's a promotional piece that David did for a new series called Man to Man, Love Your Mind. And I'm going to play it right now for you. For those of you that are listening, I think it's still just as powerful, even if you can't see the visual. So I'm going to play that and then Dr. Wallace will jump in. So let me see if I can share my screen and the sound. And this is David Mann and Friends. It's a piece, new piece that we're launching called Man to Man, Love Your Mind.
Hi, I'm David Mann, and I am super excited about the new series, Man to Man, Love Your Mind. It's a space that I wanted to create that we could come and just all just be
I'm Belinda,
to talk
and this
about
is Willard, and we
health.
Were adopted
when
in 2021.
When you hear the term mental
when
health,
we first met
what is the
Todd,
first
he was
thing
singing
that
a
comes to
song,
mind?
and I was like, wow, look at this kid with the biggest...
Not sure what just happened. There's a YouTube video. There we go. Hold on, I'm going to start it over. for just a little bit. Bear with me. We have tech challenges sometimes. We are human. We're working through it. Give me a second. Another video sounded like it was playing in the background, so let me try this again.
I'm Sandra, this is Jorge, and we were adopted in 2019. I remember when they first came to us, Michael was already a teenager. The whole cliche.
What is happening? Okay, I'm not sure. So maybe I'll come back to that at the end. What I want to do, Dr. Wallace, now is have you speak. I'm going to about this issue and what you're seeing with Black men and trauma and all of what. And I just also want to say to you, my condolences. We've talked before. Dr. Wallace lost his mother recently and has been going through it. And so I just want to share my condolences for you and your family as well. And I really appreciate you being here despite that as well. So thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. First, it's sort of ironic that this and when it was first mentioned to me, the Love Your Mind campaign, I did not know that it was connected to Kurt and David, but I followed David when he first started talking about his struggle with depression and the things that he was going through. And one of the things, and I was sharing this with you before we came on, Kelly, that I was watching an interview he did with Tamla Mann, and that was a part of the interview where he was trying to describe the way he felt. And he said that he felt like he was drowning. And no one would know that he was drowning, or no one could see him drowning. And he felt that no one would ever see him drowning until he had drowned. It immediately resonated with me because my description was always, I feel like I'm screaming at the top of my lungs, but I don't think anyone will hear me until I go silent.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that as an expert in this field, that's the feeling that many Black men have, is that even when I'm trying to let you know that something's not right, the common response, regardless of whether male or female, is, you've got this. I'll pray for you. You'll pull through. And it's not because they don't care. It's because you've been the one that's presented yourself as the strong one. Something my grandmother said to me, and she was not a scholar, but she was unbelievably wise. Something she said to me when I was young, and she saw my natural altruism and how I always wanted to help people, and that nothing seemed to bother me, that I just kept going. She said, hey, look, I just want to let you know that nobody comes to the aid of the strong. And I didn't know what that meant until I got older. And I realized that everybody will look to you. But even when you're telling, but imagine, and I get it, though. Imagine you got this person you're leaning on that has the right words for you. Or when you're going through something, they're there for you. They can make you laugh. They got the answer, the solution. They can comfort you. They seem always stronger than you are. And all of a sudden they come to you and tell you they need help.
Mm-hmm.
That crumbles your entire paradigm, because now the person I've been carrying my whole hope that if I ever get into it, this person's got me, is now telling me they need me.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have to realize is, when I saw what David was saying, and I'm saying, okay, I know that feeling. And I know that most men at some point, if they're honest with themselves, they know that feeling. Then what we need to do is, we need to come together and we need to start giving one another permission to be in that place. That, you know, and you and I have talked about, I mean, this time last year, I literally finalized my divorce. Anybody that knows how I am about my family knows how devastating that was. And literally, like right now at this time, preparing to bury my brother. And then November has never been a good month for 30 years, because it was Thanksgiving of 92. I buried my great grandfather, my adopted father. So this time of the year has never been that great for me. And so being in the relationship with Marion made it better for the time we were together, because that was her big thing. So she made it this place. And so when that happened, it was like, here we go again. And who do you talk to? Who do you tell? And luckily, I have people that are colleagues and friends that I can talk to. But again, even them, like I'm preparing now to do a symposium on the 18th on mental health and microaggressions in the Black community and strained relationships between police law enforcement, but how we heal the community through healing mental health. And we don't get it. We talk about trauma, but we don't see the impact of trauma on our mental health. But in talking to these guys, again, they're always deferring to me. And the first thing that happened when I lost my mom, and I'm being transparent here because I think that sometimes the best way is for people to see you're human.
Absolutely.
You know, when I lost my mom, one of the first things that pops into mind is she's the last parental figure. Now, she hasn't been functional in a while. So I've been functioning, but now literally, technically, I'm the patriarch of the family. I'm 56 years old and I'm already the oldest, the elder in the family. And now here comes everybody. And everybody expects you to have the answers. And then here comes the question, and this is the thing that I want to sort of dive into so that the women here can understand what the men go through, because the darkness is different for our women than it is for our men. And I think we need to understand that, and I hope that I can bring clarity to that. But so here it is, and I'm looking at this, and then here comes the man, now I got to do this and I've got to do this and I've got to do. And you think for someone who's really driving to be the best that they be, the plate is always full. So anytime something else dumps on it, you go, oh, my God. And then you adjust. The problem is with most men, they adjust without decompressing. So in other words, we just figure out a way to carry the load. We never release. And that builds up pressure. And the way that we do this is through accomplishment. So to give an understanding, women and men are wired differently. I mean, when I say wired different, we're not just two different genders. We're wired different. Our brains are wired different. A woman's brain moves to the from the left to the right. It is highly focused on discernment. It feels, it has a sense. That's why the average woman has a higher level of discernment than the man does. Men are visual. Our brains weren't front to back. We work and operate highly on what we are able to accomplish with our hands and with, you know, so when we accomplish something, that's how we reload. That's how we lift up. So the less we accomplish, the more suppressed we become. Women, their depression is outside of chemical imbalances and a lot of other stuff that can contribute to that. But when we're talking about the mental management or the thought management that can help with depression, we're talking about emotion, how I feel, you know, and the darkness comes from that. But with a man, it's highly predicated on how well am I doing? That's why when you have someone in your corner, a mate, or when you're a kid, mom normally starts out, then dad comes along, hey, kid, I'm proud of you. But it starts out, mama loves you, you're doing such a great job, oh my God. And, you know, we're built that way. We're built to be reaffirmed. So then if there's an absence of reaffirmation and you haven't trained yourself how to affirm yourself, you're now looking externally for validation that you may not get. And if you can't read the cues of life, which are, look what I've done. And most people now, because of social media, are looking for home runs. They want these quantum leaps in life that, look, I was here and now I'm here. I succeeded, and life is about these little micro progressions you make every week.
Right.
That if you just look at it in the day, you're not going to even see it. But if you look at it and you measure it next year, you'll see I'm better off than I was last year. But you have to be willing to be able to count the micro progressions, and most men aren't trained that way. And society as a whole isn't teaching us to be happy with the progressions, because if you can learn to appreciate microaggressions, then you can learn how to create them. The one thing that I do, and my thing is every day, is that I grow daily. It's a covenant I made with myself and God years ago. And the way that I assure that I do this is simply I read. I learn. So obviously I'm going to come into things that challenge me and teach me daily. But what if I have a real laid back day? So I have this quote or this mantra says, no zero days. And what it means is there can be no days that I do not grow. Because if I grow in knowledge, I grow in capacity. And if I grow in capacity, my ability to achieve things intensifies and grows. But I have to ensure that. So every day I'm going to read something I don't know. I'm going to research something I don't know. I'm going to study something I don't know. I'm going to try to talk to somebody that's going to throw something at me that I haven't had to field to challenge my mind. And that's constantly happening. With the average man, life is moving. Show up to work, do work, come home, meet the demands of being a husband, meet the demands of being a father, meet the demands of whatever it is you're doing. And there's no space to say, I feel inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
There's no space to say, I don't feel like I'm measuring up. And what we will tend to do, and I need the ladies here who have significant others or are preparing at some point to take on a relationship. You have to understand this. There's this notion going around now that men should not be praised for doing what they are supposed to do. The problem is the very thing that fuels that drive is praise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are, you know, when God presents himself to us, his predominant representation of his relationship with us is what? As a father.
Mm-hmm.
So then we as men are a microcosm of that representation. And what does God demand all the time for doing what he said he's going to do? Praise. And we are built that if you want, ladies, if you want a man to do something, tell him he did it well. He'll double down. I promise you, we're built that way. We want to hear you say we're doing a good job. And it doesn't mean we want you to praise us for doing stupid stuff. It doesn't mean that we want you to tell us we're right when we're wrong. We want you to challenge us as well. We want you to say, hey, I know you can do better. I know, because if you tell us we can do better, we're going to figure out how. Mm-hmm. But the beautiful thing about that praise is it tells me I'm on the right track. It validates this idea that I'm doing something I'm supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. I'm handling my business. Whereas if all I get is what life is telling me, and so I have a bad day at work, they tell me, hey, I get a bad evaluation at work, or something was supposed to happen and I missed out and a bill doesn't get paid, or whatever the situation is, and it starts to cascade. If you look at men and you look at the spike in suicidation over the last 6 years, and that's been a 49% spike in suicidation from Black males ages, and this is crazy, ages 14 to 24. Why right. So young? Because at 14, that's the point where the male is moved through puberty or now moving into adolescence. And it's a point where self-discovery has to reveal itself. So it's this point where at 14, I'm asking myself some questions. Where am I going? What is my meaning in this world? What is my position of power? Because every man instinctively yearns power. And there's no more of an emasculated male on the planet than the Black man. So, you know, and it's funny how we're always constituted for holding somebody back. We have no institutional power whatsoever to hold anybody back. We don't have the ability to not hire our women because our women are constantly told that it's us holding them back, but we have no institutional power. We don't control whether you get hired or not. We don't control whether you get accepted into what university. We don't control, you know, we barely control some of the elements and components in the home. And this isn't an attack on our women because you guys are getting it terribly. And anybody follows me knows that I'm a big advocate of our women. I tell people a lot of times, this is a real short digression. I tell people all the time, every time I hear the term strong Black woman, I cringe. And the first thing, because Black women have become so defensive of strong Black women and Black girl magic that they don't see the toxic undercurrent that I see. The undercurrent is this. Every time I hear strong Black woman, it's about a Black woman doing something by herself that she shouldn't have to do. And that is going to eventually weigh on her. That's going to take her away from the beauty of her true power, and it's going to leave us. We're supposed to be working in unison, feminine energy and masculine energy coming together to create this synergy that provides an environment for our kids to come up and be nurtured. And a lot of the failure in the nurturing part is because we aren't where we need to be. Now back to, and I want to leave plenty of time for people to ask questions. So I'm not going to drop, because this is something I can literally talk on all day. So when we talk about this spike, what we're getting is, before social media, I only had to measure myself against the people I saw. Even in extreme situations, the worst deviance, and I'm a movie fanatic, so the worst deviation or expansive difference in who I am and somebody I've got to measure myself against is Denzel. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm not Denzel. Okay, I can get over that. That's Denzel. I got a whole space on my now. There's this place called social media where everybody hangs out in some way, shape, form, or fashion on one of these platforms, and everybody's flexing their muscle of who they are and what they're doing and how they're doing it. And then you got the conversations is, if your man can't do all of these things, he's crap. Mm-hmm. And so now you're measuring yourself. Can I do this? Can I do this? And for the Black man, and I think it's really important that we understand some of the simple dynamics. I get it. For every affluent Black man, there is literally tens of thousands of men who are just trying to find ways to make ends meet, and it doesn't make them bad men. One of the biggest discussion is he paying all the bills? Well, the true nature of it is, we're actually looking at it from that perspective, then we need to look at the reality of economics within the Black community. He can pay all the bills if you're willing to live in a household where the average budget is about $35,000 to $38,000, because the median income for a Black male is $44,000. So all this six figure, only 6% of our men make six figures. That's the reality of it. Now, if you check social media, you'll swear everybody's doing it. Mm-hmm. And then you start to measure yourself about it, man. And so now you actually are getting handled in certain spaces because of that. And this is just the superficial level of it. Now you drop down to, how were you managed and how were you nurtured as a child? What do you place your value on as a man? Mm-hmm. Do you understand your value beyond your bank account? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I push against men, before I was ever a provider, I was a protector. I'm physically built different than the women in my world so that I can protect them physically. And then from that, I develop a capacity mentally and physically to become a wage earner. Now I can move into that part of provision. But I'm also the person that can see things in you that you cannot see in yourself. Why? You are designed to feel. Your spiritual element is emotion and feeling and discernment. I need you in my life because there are things you're going to feel about a person I can't see. You need me because I can see things in you you can't feel. And together we work together. But when that isn't happening and I'm not functioning in the fullness of that, or I'm not giving validity and gravity to the fact that a woman feels safe when I'm around, because I'm not going to let anything happen to her. Because there's so much, our men have been commodified to a level that that's all we think about, the bag, the bag, the bag. And I'm not saying we're not supposed to be that. What I'm saying is, I've been pretty blessed. I've had some great years. I've had some lean years, but I've been blessed. And I've been around a lot of people who are extremely blessed. And I've yet to meet a person who's been extremely blessed, didn't have a lean time. If all your identity is on what's in your bank account, you're going to struggle mightily, because at some point that's not going to be there, or it's going to be threatened.
Right.
Then you get into anxiety, you get into stress, and stress is this thing that's literally destroying our health.
Right.
And it's based off of the mental processing of our reality and how we see it. So when I start to see, man, I'm failing, stress, man, I'm not meeting my goals, I'm not doing this, stress. Mm-hmm. I can't really talk to anybody about it because they're going to say I'm weak. Mm-hmm. Stress. And now stress starts to attack the immune system. Mm-hmm. It downregulates genes within within your genetic makeup. This is the epigenetic area that I teach on a lot. Is now the very genes that are designed to create health and to dispel illness and to make sure your organs operate fully. Now it's under assault. So it starts to decline at the very same time. These genes that are prone to disease, cancer genes, autoimmune disease, they're upregulated. So you're literally through stress turning on disease genes that literally attack the body. Now organ failure, heart disease, certain forms of cancer. Mm-hmm. And we don't talk about that. So if we're not killing ourselves through acute suicide, we're killing ourselves slowly through spiritual suicide that is attacking mm-hmm. our bodies. And mm-hmm. so one of the things that I'm working on now, because I have a number of clients, and I also have a son who struggles with a severe form of psychosis. And so I have clients, and one of the things that happens, and Kelly, you and I talked about this, is once our children reach 18, mm-hmm. we no longer have the power to make sure they get the help they need. And mm-hmm. now it's on them to say, I accept the help. I'm willing to participate in the help. And most people with severe forms of psychosis don't see the psychosis. Right. So then what happens is they don't see any need for it. And then when you go to the authorities, or you go to a place to say, OK, we need to get them help, it's, well, until they either harm themselves or they harm someone else, there's nothing we can do. So they're either going to kill themselves or they're going to hurt someone else and end up in jail. And then we can talk about helping them. And that's so behind it. So I'm doing a lot of research on that and the impact, because anybody who's followed the work on epigenetics, which mm-hmm. is talking and adverse childhood experiences. Well, one of the ACEs, which is counted as 1 point in when you take an ACE score, which adverse childhood experiences, one is losing a parent to incarceration. Another is having a family member diagnosed with a mental disorder. Mm-hmm. So you only need 4 ACEs to literally turn your health outcomes over the course mm-hmm. of your life upside down. And we're already at 2 with a mass majority of the people in this country. So these are the things we're looking for. So my goal ultimately is to help people create spaces on a micro level. So that means inside the house, in a community level where people can come together and share and open. And I think what David and Kirk and all those guys are doing, I think that's extremely important. I think you have to create spaces where men can sit down and talk, especially men who have some form of status, because we're normally seen as impenetrable. We are, you know, nothing bothers us. And the truth of the matter is the vast majority, and just listening to David and coming from a family in the gospel arena, I'm familiar with Kurt on an intimate level, Fred Hammond, Israel, all those guys, because my family deals with them. Those guys feel more than the average guy.
Yeah.
But you only get to see the performance. So you only get to see what they do in an hour, in 2 hours. You don't get to see the life they live and the challenges they go through. And so it seems to you, oh, man, I wish I had that life. Well, be careful what you wish for.
That's right.
So
I want to just, oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
To that point, there's two things I wanted to ask you about. One was around your son. And how, because you mentioned this morning. And so, and the fact that many of us have adult children who, like you said, after they're 18, they can refuse to take their meds. They can refuse to see a therapist or whatever, what have you. So my first question is how do you deal with your 33-year-old son? How do you show him that unconditional love and support? Can you give us some tips or advice on how to do that? And then I want to circle back fully on the David Mann comment that you just made.
Right. Well, with my son, is the thing that I've always tried to present to him, number one, is no matter what, you can always come to me.
Mm-hmm.
And my son grew up, his grandmother, my ex-wife's mom, drank coffee like I drank coffee. And at 5 years old, she would keep him a lot. And he drank coffee. So he's addicted to coffee like me. So mm-hmm. whenever we want to talk, he's going to want to hang out at Starbucks. And so that's the thing. Hey, kid, let's get some coffee and talk.
Okay. But
the thing that I instilled in him is it's okay to need help.
Right.
I'm never going to judge you for needing help.
That's right.
I'm going to praise you for the strength of admitting that you need help. The other thing that I did is put my ego aside with my ex. So I pride myself in maintaining working relationships with my children's mothers. And yes, I have multiple mothers. A lot of things I didn't get right in life. I started early. This kid was born before. No, he's the third. So he was born, I think I was 20, 21. Mm-hmm. So I started early. So matter of fact, I was on with her before we got on, just discussing him. Mm-hmm. So he knows that I care enough to put how I feel about whatever went on and went wrong to a side to deal with him. And then it's just checking on him, because the people tend to sink back. The badder things get, we tend to sink back when we should actually be exposing ourselves to the resources, but we sink back. So that is primarily, it is communication. And I'll admit this when it comes to Kendra. Imagine being someone who's literally written books on mental health, written books and lectured and traveled and talked. And you have clients that you help and you got a son that you can't. That hits so hard. So, I mean, it's always, everybody has kryptonite. And so the thing that I have to look at in that is I literally lean into him to let him see I'm hurting too.
Yeah.
Because I know there's a part of you that sees something's not right and you don't know what to do, but we're not going to fail because we're going to get through this together. And so that would ultimately be, to me, my advice to men is learn how to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. My advice to women is I use an old religious analogy when I'm talking to women about how they handle men. Everybody talks about the creation and that God took a rib from Adam and made man. And that's why women have extra rib. And I said, the rib cage is symbolic of protecting vital organs. It's a cage. It's a protection. Mm-hmm. Your rib is it's the part of you that's supposed to cover his weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And he's meant to cover and protect you, but that rib is a covering. And when you see he's weak, that's when you cover. The good woman comes in, and instead of exploiting the weaknesses, she says, I see that. Let me get that right. Let me just lean right here. I got that. Work in your strengths. I'm going to cover this weakness until you get it, until you get it right. And then you cover me completely. And that's what he'll do when everybody's healthy. Mm-hmm. So now you can go ahead and circle back to.
Interesting. Great. That's interesting advice. I think with Kyle, just checking in on him has been really nice. And actually, when he calls, he wants to talk like just 30 minutes straight. 40 minutes straight. And so I just listen and give him that space to talk. Mm-hmm. It's very different. And I don't ask, any performative questions. And I'm seeing a transition in him in his own time. And being that support has been really helpful. So I'm going to see if I can play this video because it's very much in line with what we're talking about today. I'm not sure why it was playing something on top of it, but I'm going to try it again. And you mentioned David Mann a couple times. We've done some really great work with him, and I'm really proud of this work on Love Your Mind and this new series that will be starting on Tuesday. But what he says is so powerful that I think would be helpful, and I'd love to get your perspective on it. So let me see if I can share my screen and have it play this time. Here we go.
Hi, I'm David Mann, and I am super excited about the new series, Man to Man, Love Your Mind. It's a space that I wanted to create that we could come and just be vulnerable to talk about our mental health. Well, when you hear the term mental health, what is the first thing that comes to mind?
Crazy.
I must have one day just sitting in my office, and I was ashamed. I was literally in my office ashamed that I wanted to kill myself.
I thought I was a healthy person, but I'm dealing with stuff that is cancerous and killing me on the inside because I have nobody to talk to. Wow. I don't trust anybody.
Most men, when you ask them, is being a man easy? Most men say no. It's incredibly difficult, but we don't talk about it. We usually keep it inside, but not today.
Hmm.
So it's an hour long conversation that we'll be living on David Mann's YouTube page. It launches on Tuesday. What was so deep, and I'm emotional just thinking about it, but listening to their conversations, they each shared for the first time what you talked about, Dr. Wallace, like being embarrassed, being ashamed to tell their spouses. David said, I didn't want to tell Tamala. I felt so depressed. And he talked about wanting to kill himself. And then Israel Houghton said, I did too. And they shared for the first time. And so I think there's this really vulnerable space that Black men need to know. You said at the beginning, how do we have a space for young Black men, for older Black men, for people to share and know that they're not alone? Because that's where the breakthrough comes.
Wow. And like I said, I've heard David say that before, and to hear Israel say it, and knowing so much of what Kirk has been through, and to hear them talk about it, it hits it on the head. Because you got to think, in the Black community for so many years, the mantra was Black people don't kill themselves. And the truth is, we have always, but not at the rate that we're starting to see it now. There's an escalation, and there's a reason why. But to say that you even thought about it is something you should be embarrassed about, something that you should be discouraged and upset. So what happens is you have this thing that's bothering you, but it's at a point where if I say something about it, it's shameful.
That's right.
And so I don't say anything, but then when I don't say anything, it gets worse.
Mm-hmm.
And the worse it gets, the less I want to talk about it, and the more dangerous it becomes.
That's right.
And if you hear the psychologist, what he says is, these are things we don't want to talk about, but not today.
Mm-hmm.
That took the cap off. That moment says, okay, we're going to talk about it. Then I guarantee you, every man in that room left lighter.
That's right.
Because number one is those men operate in the same circle. They've known each other for years. And so what happens is when you hear the people you look at and you see that you see in your mind as being on the top of that game saying, man, I was at my lowest. And if every man is honest with himself, there is a point in your life you were at your lowest where you felt like giving up.
Mm-hmm.
And again, yeah, it makes you emotional because mm-hmm. to see what you've been hitting on for so long finally starting to play out. Admit this, because what I would rather see is David Mann saying that was a moment I wanted to kill myself than hearing on the radio or watching
that
on the TV
that
he did it.
All right.
And so that's the thing that we've got to get to, is this point where we sit up and say, hey, brother, I'd rather talk to you about this than to hear something happen that we can't right. change.
That's right.
And we've got to give our men. And the other thing that stood out is when he said, when you think of mental health, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Immediately out of Kirk's mouth is crazy.
Right.
So nobody wants to admit.
That's the stigma of our community.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So nobody wants to say I'm crazy. And so nobody even wants to say I'm, because that's this natural stigma and association with mental health and mental illness that says, no, mental illness is no different than any other form of illness that you get. It's That's something right. that needs to be treated, and it's something that will make you better. It will make you whole. It's like any other thing in your body. If you don't treat it, it's going to debilitate you over time, and it's going to shorten your life and reduce the quality of your life. Same thing with your mental health. On the thing, love your mind. Loving your mind is saying, I want the best for my mind. And that means sometimes admitting I'm not the best. If I'm overweight, I know I need to get in the gym. And we'll have no problem talking about being overweight. We'll joke all day long. I'm fat. Ooh, Lord, I don't put this weight on, man, dude, this beer belly. I heard a guy, we were talking last night at the cigar shop, and he's talking about this beer belly, this keg. We have no problem talking about something like that. But when we come to milk, no, I'll talk about being fat. I'll talk about being broke. I'll talk about a bunch, but I am not finna say I'm crazy.
Right.
And the truth of the matter is, all the things, this is the beauty of it to me. And what my experience has shown me, if I can get my mind right, everything else corrects itself.
That's right.
Because everything is processed through the filter of my mind. So if I can love my mind enough to purify and filter out all the toxicity of unrealistic expectations of taking on way too much without sharing with these pretentious ideas of who I am, and say, look, sometimes I pride myself in being a good husband. I pride myself in being a good father. But if I'm honest with myself, there are some times I'm sitting down saying, have I done enough? And the truth of the answer is, if you're human, no, there's something more you can do. Don't beat yourself up. Find a way to get it done. Make the journey about growing into the person you want to be instead of punishing yourself for not being it.
Right. And that's the problem. It's like there's some research that shows 3 out of 5 Black Americans don't feel people talking about it, talking to people that are close to them about their mental health. And so what happens is you have those stories where they each share their story. One of them says, almost drove off the highway, you know, swooping around the Pacific Coast Highway, and was thinking, well, maybe I'll just drive off. What'll happen if I just miss the turn? But I want to just say, I think, and I want to open up the floor for questions. If you want to put something in the chat, feel free. If you want to come off of mute, you can hit *6. I want to just say, like you said, you know, being able to show that there's a mental health challenge, whether it's in ourselves or our children, or loved ones, it could be a brother, it could be a spouse, it could be a significant other or partner. It is a sign of strength, not weakness. And I think the sooner we get to that, saying it's a sign of strength to ask for help. Like you said, if it was cancer or a physical illness, we would reach out to our entire family, our entire world, and say, please pray for me. I'm, you know, going through this. But if it's a mental illness, people don't do that. It's a hush hush. It's a, ooh, and like Kirk says, they're thinking they're crazy because that's our culture. And so I hope that that work that is being launched later this week starts to do that and starts to provide a safe space specifically for Black men who have never had that before, who've never had an outlet really before. So I want to say that. And I do want to, it looks like there are people putting notes in the chat. So let me just see that. Someone says, Dee, she is our the executive director of Sunrise. So welcome, Dee. Her question is, where does self-reflection and self-acceptance come into play with Black men? Many women do understand a man's need to feel appreciated and validated, but we can't be your everything all the time. Yes. When does personal accountability become a part of this growth pattern? And when does this become a part of the conversation? I love that question.
Okay. And I'm going to offer a disclaimer before I do this. I'm going to apologize because it may sound a little abrasive, but I want to be very direct in answering that question because to me, I read into it differently than just the question. On the surface, it is number one, a man's responsibility is to be accountable before anything else. The dependence upon someone else's affirmations is secondary. So yes, a man needs to be accountable. A man needs to be self-reflective and to be able to look at who he is and develop a sense of self-reflection. It's not the woman's responsibility to define who you are in this world. So that's the simple answer to it. But the very nature of the question reflects a frustration that says immediately me saying that we need our affirmations responds in, we can't be everything. And at no time did I ever say that we want you to be everything, but that's the interpretation. Now, imagine if a man is looking at you and he knows if I tell you I need you, you may actually do it, but your response to it is, he go again, he needs me. Now, what I can tell you as a man, and I don't represent every man, but I represent, I hope, the ideology, not just in who I am, because I'm still growing. But the ideology is the representation of what we should be, is there's no numerical standard of what my woman could come to me and need from me. And I get to, oh, look, I'm tired of this. You need to figure it out. Now, there's a part of her that needs to be accountable because it's her decisions that creates the vast majority of what's going on. It's her that needs to look at it and say, okay, it's me that's doing this. But at the same point, I'm never going to sit up and say, hey, look, we've dealt with this. I'm not doing this again. So I get what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. But again, to me, this is where we as men need to come together as a group and start to pour into each other. Because again, we are putting a lot on our women to say, fix me. It's not her job to fix you. It's not her job to, as a matter of fact, I think that what we need to do is really have the have some sort of roundtable discussion where we actually listen to each other. Because what we're doing right now is literally reflecting the frustrations of the inadequacies within our relationship. And both of us are having stresses for it. She's depressed because of it. And you are feeling inadequate because of it. And there's no energy to pour into the relationship. And it's even worse when you're in places where ideologies and values differ. Because now it's hard for me to find you because we're not thinking alike. It doesn't mean we think the same way, but we need to have the same goal. And so it's easier to encourage somebody when you're headed in the same direction because it's easy to see where they stumbled. But when you're in on two different planes, then it's different. So I agree 100% with what D said as far as it's the responsibility of the man to be accountable to himself, to his responsibilities, to his family. It's his responsibility to develop a sense of self-acceptance. Nobody can make you okay with you but you. And so when we talk about affirmation, we're not talking about you. What's the word? I guess the simplest way to put this, telling a man he did a good job at something is the equivalent to your husband telling you you look beautiful in that dress. It's just simply going to make you feel better. It's going to make you, you know, and then especially if you're wearing a dress that you couldn't get into before you started your weight loss journey and not that dress, and he says that, guess who's going to be in the gym 30 minutes earlier the next day?
Yeah.
You are. Well, it's the same thing. If you sit up and say, baby, man, that was great the way you handled that. He's going to get up and he's going to do it harder tomorrow. That's the only thing I'm saying is that the way to really get him is not to try to manipulate him, to out-communicate him, because you can talk your way around him 99.9% of the time. Yeah. That's not how he's built. He actually communicates best without speaking. And so you're going to talk laps around him most of the time. And and so this is the thing that I would sit up and say. So Dee is absolutely right in her assessment of it's my responsibility to know who I am and to do it. So my thing is, what concerns me is me simply saying affirm your man results in you trying to be everything for him. And so that's an interpretation of how you see that responsibility of affirmation is I got to make you who you are. Yeah. Well, let's just say it this way. You can't make him anything he's not, but don't contribute to the things that are detracting from him.
Yeah. Right. I think she's clarifying, and there's also a really great other point. I think it's really about being kind and loving. And that's if we are that way with other people, whether it's our spouses, our children, you know, leading with love and leading with kindness, then those simple things are easy to do. And it's not control and not manipulation. I think maybe that's something to explore another day. But Dee is saying, to clarify, some affirmations are natural responses. You look nice. You did a great job. It's the attention seeking affirmations, parentheses, in the workplace and interpersonally that are draining. I get that. Like every level, and I know that's a whole nother hour to talk about, but I do want to comment. So I completely hear you, Dee, and completely get that, what you're saying. I did want to comment that there's another woman that has said, I chose to divorce because he was in denial, unwilling to get help, and I needed to break the generational curses of toxic masculinity and dysfunction that was breaking me and our son. And I gave a huge heart out for that, because breaking that is amazing. And that takes such courage to do. Do you want to comment on that, Dr. Wallace?
Yes, I do. I absolutely agree. I mean, if a person isn't willing to take accountability, if they aren't willing, and the word she uses is probably the best word I think about, denial. Mm-hmm. Nothing's wrong with me. It's everybody else.
That's right.
I'm good. and all of that, absolutely your responsibility. I'm real big on covenant, but I'm also real big on health. Covenant is not meant to hold you into a toxic environment. It's not meant to hold you into an abusive environment. It's not meant to make you stay in a place that's not growing you and freeing you and giving
lifting.
You
empower, mm-hmm.
and lifting and empowering you. That's mm-hmm. not what it is. That's an abusive situation. It's exactly what it is. And you have a responsibility to walk out of it and to create a safer space. The only thing that I would actually challenge in that statement is the term toxic masculinity. And the reason I don't like it is because it's being used as an attack on the masculinity of Black men. Mm-hmm. To me, there's no such thing as toxic masculinity. Toxic behavior by a man is an automatic toxic masculinity. It's mm-hmm. toxic behavior.
Interesting.
Masculinity in its purest state cannot be toxic. Masculinity is covering, protecting, providing, feeding, covering, strengthening, loving. That's how a man expresses his masculinity. It's in all the things he naturally is and supposed to be. When he starts to venture off from that, it's toxic behavior, but it's not his masculinity. When he's in his masculine, the same thing, when a woman is in her true femininity, there's nothing wrong with it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And when she starts to use her femininity in a wrong way, it doesn't become toxic femininity. You know, matter of fact, you don't hardly ever hear a term like toxic femininity because it doesn't exist. What exists is a person that's broken or hurt or angry or manipulative or narcissistic, behaving in a way that's not good for anyone else but them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's toxic. Masculinity is truest form. And the reason why I think we have to make this difference is because if you're not observing what I'm observing, you're probably not seeing it. There's an assault on the masculinity of men. There is a push to effeminize the Black male image. And one of the ways to do that is to make anything associated with masculinity eventually become toxic. So eventually, if I keep saying toxic masculinity, eventually just saying masculinity associates itself with toxicity. Mm-hmm. So what do? We create a campaign and we keep pushing this. The bottom line is, if you're behaving with a toxic behavior, you're a narcissist, mm-hmm. or you may have a number of other disorders that you can sit up and you can talk about, or you could just be a mean, ugly, nasty person.
Right.
But a man operating in his true masculinity is what you want. A man that's going to protect you, the man that's going to cover you, a man that's going to speak to you kindly, a man that's going to elevate you and edify you, a man that's going to love his kids and take care of his kids. Those are all masculine traits. There's no way to toxify that. When you become outside mm-hmm. of that, you are now operating as the opposite of that. So it's actually mm-hmm. the opposite of masculinity versus toxic masculinity. But she's absolutely right. You are not required to stay in a situation where you're not being treated the way you deserve to be treated. And especially when you have children involved, right. because he yeah. is, for his children, especially a son, he's the model of manhood. And the kid is looking at him as, this
right.
is what men
it's
do.
He's going to have the same behaviors, right?
Exactly.
So it's 9:59 and we are almost out of time, but I want to just say that people are saying, and me too, thank you for clarifying and making sure we're clear on the nuances and the harmfulness of saying toxic masculinity. That's very helpful. I also want to acknowledge Jules, who says her name out loud here, which is why I'm saying your name as well. But she has said here that I have learned that giving my sons appreciative, specific positive feedback have been the most affirming and helpful to them. I completely agree. It makes such a huge difference. Instead of focusing on the little things they did wrong, or, you know, what about that? No, silence and, you know, acknowledging and positively, like you said, those little positive things. People just want to know that they're loved and cared for, especially our children. I appreciate you. This is a one person, I'm going to read this last note, but we are out of time. It says, the difficulty is in the lack of resources for authentic access for Black adult males experiencing BPD, psychosis, etc. While at the same time, yes, they can also be resistant to the help and not realizing that they really do need the help. This is a current issue in my family and it is heavy and hopeless. This was great. I'll listen to the replay to further digest. I would just encourage you to say, hopeless is such a loaded word. I do believe there's always hope, even in the darkest nights. I've been there when It's been heavy, as you said, heavy and super painful and super dark, but somehow at least know that there's always hope and we'll always get to the other side. I really fundamentally believe that. It's been 4 years of working here with the Sunrise Project and with people like Dr. Wallace. And I will give you, to the person that wrote that note, you may want to reach out to Dr. Wallace. He helped me and my family with one-on-one coaching several times. So Dr. Wallace, can you share your email information? And then Tiara will close us out.
Yeah, I put it right in the, it's in the thing. And she is absolutely right in that one thing as far as lack of resources. And that's one of the biggest pushes. I'm actually on a research project, an 18-month research project now on ways to address that. I'm giving myself as much as I possibly can to being a resource.
Awesome.
So, yeah, definitely. So thank you.
Yes. And you are an incredible resource. And yes. And so thank you. And if you don't see the chat, I'll just say it's CEO@RickWallacePhD.link. And the David Mann podcast, it's actually not a podcast. It's going to be on Mann TV on his YouTube channel. So we will be launching that on Tuesday. I say we because my day job produced it. And I'm really proud of that work. I had counsel's
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. But mental health, this is the work I want to do, just this work. And so people that know what I do for my day job, the Ad Council is a client and we do their mental health work for the Black community specifically. So it's on Mann TV, which is their YouTube channel. And yeah, super proud of that. But it's called Man to Man. It's the first episode and really powerful. But again, I want to come back and say thank you, Dr. Wallace, for being here. I know it's been a rough week, month, year.
Yes,
but thank you for really being such an incredible inspiration and provider of hope to my family and to all the families here. So appreciate you more than you know.
You're welcome.
All right, Tiara, if you can close us out with a prayer today. Appreciate it.
Sure. So Father God, we thank you for another Sunrise Sunday. We thank you again for Kelly and family for providing this platform. We thank you for Dr. Rick Wallace, who has joined us here today to provide so much knowledge, wisdom, and insight, God. We thank you, Lord, for freeing men today, for releasing them from the stigma and the shame associated with speaking out and seeking help. We pray for wisdom and insight on how Black men and women can work cooperatively together so that all can feel loved, respected, appreciated, and valued. God, give us to be supportive of one another in the ways that are uniquely fit for each of us. Help us to develop a stronger sense of community in which we feel responsible for one another. Lord, we also pray that the wisdom shared today translates into better interactions between not only men and women, but also parents and children as well. For all of these things, we give you thanks. We pray for a peaceful, powerful, productive, and positive week for each and every person on this call. In Jesus' name, amen.
Goodness.
Amen. Thank you, Tiara. My coffee mug says peace this morning. I love how you said peaceful, powerful, productive week. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you, Dr. Wallace. And we'll be back next weekend. I think Dr. Linda McGee will be here next Sunday morning. So thank you again. Have a beautiful day.
Everybody, thank you.